Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the regular board of the California Regional Water Quality Control Board, Lahontan Region. I apologize to you for our not starting, apparently on time. I appreciate the fact that you are all here with us this evening. My name is Pete Pumphrey. I'm from Chalfont, and I am the chairman of the board. I want to thank the members of the public again for coming to our meeting. We do a better job when you participate in the issues which come before us. At this time, I would like to introduce the other members of the regional board: Keith Diaz from Rosamond, Dr. Amy Horn from Truckee, Don Jardine from Markleyville, Kimberly Cox, our newest member from Hellendale, and Eric Sandell, who will be joining us shortly.
He's here.
She is here. Pardon me. What happens when you look straight forward? The Assistant Executive Officer of the Lahontan Regional Board is Lori Kemper. Ms. Kemper, would you introduce the staff who are present with us this evening?
Yes, first I'd like to introduce Sue Genera, our Executive Assistant. She's here to help us have a meeting that runs smoothly, and she can help and answer your questions. We also have Doug Smith and Richard Booth in the back. They are also part of our staff, and Chuck Curtis. They're going to be helping with facilitation tonight and helping you fill out orange cards if you need to, if you'd like to speak to the board. In addition to that, we have Ann Holden and Lisa Dernbach as part of our project team for Hinckley. We have Mike Plasiak from our Victorville office and also Tom Brown from our Victorville office. And I think that's it for our staff. We also have a guest from Sacramento from the Office of Enforcement, Laura Dravant. She's in the office, in the room tonight. And then up here at the dais, we have Kim Niemeyer, who is legal counsel to the board.
Tonight, the regional board will be hearing three separate items. And the agenda, for those of you who did not get a copy because we ran out in the back, that's posted up here on the screen in the front. Items 9, the Hinckley status report. Item 10, public forum. And item 11, PG&E Hinckley EIR certification. Although we must use our time wisely, we encourage your input on any item so that our decision will be based on all available information. If you wish to speak on any agenda item, please fill out an orange card indicating which item you wish to address and how many minutes you will need. Please hand the cards to Doug Smith or Richard Booth. Although we do not administer an oath in most proceedings before this board, we expect all statements made to be truthful, with no attempts to mislead by false statements, deceptive presentation, or failure to include essential information. We also ask that you obey our ground rules, which are: treat everyone with respect. This includes board members, board staff, anyone who testifies, and your fellow citizens. This means no personal attacks and no violent, contemptuous, or disruptive behavior. In the interest of everyone's time, please communicate your ideas clearly and efficiently. So that we can develop an accurate administrative record, we ask that you speak only after you are recognized. At that time, please come to the lectern and speak to the agendized item. If you do not follow these rules or become repetitious, I may ask you to sit down. Lastly, any person aggrieved by an action or inaction of the regional board, including but not limited to the issuance, modification, or rejection of waste discharge requirements, administrative civil liability, or a cease and desist order, may petition the State Water Resources Control Board to review the decision. The State Board must receive the petition within 30 days of the Regional Board's meeting at which the action was taken. Board staff will provide you with copies of the regulations about filing petitions if you request them. They are also available on the State Water Resources Control Board's website. As indicated by Ms. Kemper, Doug Smith is going to help us tonight by facilitating the meeting and receiving comments from the public. And I would like to ask him to just tell us really briefly how that's going to proceed.
Thank you, Chairman Pumphrey. As
as he said, I'm Doug Smith from the Tahoe office, and I'm here to help you all out tonight. And what I'll be doing is standing off to the side, and then Richard Booth in the back has more cards. Chuck Curtis is over there, has some more cards. And the way it's going to work tonight, as Chairman Humphrey said, is we've got three items. Item 9 will go first, which is the status report. And since there's a lot of folks here in the room, what we want to do is have the three presenters, which is A, the Water Board staff's going to make their brief presentation, followed by PG&E making their brief presentation, followed by the CAC. And then there will be some questions, likely, from the board. They will ask the presenters some questions. And then, when that's finished, then we'll ask for the public comment. So if you have questions or comment, wish to say something on item 9, and even item 10 and 11, just fill out one of these. If you are really apprehensive about coming to the lectern to talk, go ahead and write down your question, and we will read it for you, okay? So you don't have to come up here. But we do encourage you to come up here because having you speak at the lectern, you know, you get to show all the emotion, everything else that you want, which is a good part. So then we'll go into public forum, and that's on any item that is not either item 9 or item 11. So anything else. And then item 11, of course, is the environmental impact report. And so then we'll do that. Then there will be, since there's quite a packed agenda here, the chairman will look at how things are going and probably take at least one break. All right? So so with that, I'll turn it back.
Agenda item 9, status report on activities concerning chromium contamination from Pacific Gas and Electric, PG&E, Hinkley Compressor Station.
I'd like Lisa Durbach to make the presentation. Start us off.
Good evening, Mr. Chairman and board members. My name is Lisa Durbach. I'm a senior engineering geologist with the board's Lake Tahoe office. And I'm going to present the status report on the activities concerning chromium contamination from the PG&E Hinkley Compressor Station. Oh, I think I've got the wrong one. In your in your board packet, I'm missing a slide in this one. Oh, Sue, I got to
switch,
change out a minute. Sorry for the delay. I have a more recent presentation, so I wanted you to get that one. I'm sorry, Sue. So, can you? You think so?
Go to the next slide.
Okay. Okay, that's it. All right. Sorry about that. All right, we're going to go back. In my presentation tonight, I'm going to first go over what we call a project roadmap. That'll be showing you where we have been regarding this project and where we're now and what we plan for the future. I'll also discuss the current status of the chromium plume and also describe the status of the domestic well program in Hinkley. And then I'll describe to you the current land treatment units that PG&E is using for remedial actions. And also I'll provide a status update on the whole house replacement water for the residences, and also the supplemental environmental program and the revised background chromium study. We got another issue we wanted to bring to your attention farther down. And then lastly, I'll provide you with what we intend to do for our next actions regarding this project. So, as you've heard over many years, most of you, is that this is a project with many parts that are always in constant motion. So we thought it was good to show you what some of these parts are and where we are intending them to lead. First of all, up here, regarding remediation, for many years, PG&E has been implementing different remedial actions for plume cleanup and containment. And the triangles on this flowchart show you where we're at currently. So in this case, we're near the end of the interim remedial actions, and that after this, we're expecting to require PG&E to implement more comprehensive cleanup of the chromium plume, and that's going to lead to the final goal of comprehensive groundwater cleanup to background levels in the aquifer. As part of this stage, there was a planning and permitting component, and it initially started out with pilot studies and then issuance of WDRs by the Water Board. PG&E conducted a feasibility study, which led to the EIR, which you're going to be considering later this evening. So after that, we intend to pursue waste discharge requirements and then directives under a cleanup and abatement order to implement the final cleanup strategy for the aquifer. And then we have the investigation component of the project. For many years, PG&E has been doing investigations to define the chromium plume. And part of that has been they conducted a background study which established what a range of naturally occurring chromium is in the aquifer. And then that arrow shows we're kind of not really in the middle of it, but we have another component of this investigation part, and that is PG&E is pursuing a revised background study, which you'll hear more about a little later. And all of this is for the purpose of accurately defining the chromium plume in groundwater that relates to their release from their compressor station. And then the last component of the project is the public health protection. We started out initially with having PG&E sample the domestic wells in Hinkley to establish what the chromium level was that was or wasn't in people's wells. And then that led to the bottled water program, which was an interim action, and then a more permanent solution, which is the whole house replacement water. And PG&E is implementing that at this time. And then underneath that, we've got a few boxes that talks about actions by other state agencies, such as the Chromium 6 public health goal, the draft MCL, which we expect the state to come out very soon with. And then after that will be a final MCL for Chromium 6. And once safe water supply is provided for the residents, PG&E can expand the remediation actions without affecting domestic wells, and of course that will lead to the ultimate goal of cleaning up the aquifer to background levels. So where are we regarding the chromium plume? When we discuss the chromium plume, we're talking about the upper aquifer and out to the background levels that the board adopted back in 2008 for the chromium. And that is 3.1 parts per billion chromium 6 and 3.2 parts per billion total chromium. So right now, as of the last investigation report we received, the plume is 6.5 miles long, a little over 2 miles wide. And there are some parts of the plume that still need some better definition, and those parts are in the north, the east, and the west. I'll show them to you on a map in a second. There's also another component of the chromium plume. There's an area in the lower aquifer that chromium has migrated, and that area for several years now has remained the same size at about half a mile wide. But fortunately, because of PG&E's remedial actions, we're seeing decreasing concentrations now in the lower aquifer. They're now at about 21 parts per billion chromium 6, whereas the previous high at one time was 41 parts per billion. So this is a map of the chromium plume outline that I hand drew to kind of show you, and just to orientate you. The blue box near the bottom is the PG&E compressor station, and south of that you see is the Mojave River, which provides the water supply to the Hinckley Valley. And then as the plume leaves the compressor station, it migrates north, and in the upper left you see a noble, and that's where the chromium is found in the lower aquifer. One thing to note about the plume that is different than probably what you saw in the past presentations is that we've got this dashed area in the north, and this is where the plume has separated. There actually is a gap of about a half mile between the southern plume and the northern plume. And a little over a year ago, both plumes were connected. They were all connected to the compressor station. But because of PG&E's remedial actions that have expanded in the last couple of years, we're going to talk about that in a few slides. But PG&E is maintaining plume migration up here at a location we call Thompson Road. And because of that containment of the plume, they're kind of starving the groundwater, and it caused the northern part of the plume to detach. And what that tells us is several things, is that the remedial actions up here in this northern part are being effective in preventing further plume migration from this area. The other thing it tells us is, as each quarter we see a bigger gap between the two, it tells us the northern part is migrating with natural groundwater flow where it's taking it to the Harper Dry Lake Valley. And what that tells us is we need to implement remedial action in that northern part to contain that for migration as well, because there's a number of well users up here in the north, and PG&E has been directed to conduct further investigations. I have some red question marks, and those show where better plume definition is needed, and I'll talk about what PG&E plans to do for that investigation. And then down here in this area, the southern part that's connected to the compressor station, I've got another question mark over here in the east where a few more monitoring wells are proposed. And then this is also a newer development. Over the last two quarters, we saw some chromium being detected in this western area going out towards Hinckley Road. And PG&E is planning further investigation of that area as well. So, in January of this year, the executive officer issued an amended order to PG&E, a cleanup and abatement order, and that was to conduct further investigations to better define the plume in those areas that needed more defining. And PG&E submitted a work plan to the Water Board that proposed monitoring wells in 20 new locations. And board staff conditionally accepted the proposal but requested that monitoring wells be installed in two additional locations than those proposed. So those monitoring wells are in the process of being installed now. They should be sampled this summer, and then we're expecting an investigation report on or by October 30th this year. Another cleanup and abatement order and amendments. This order was originally issued in 2011, and this requires PG&E to conduct a domestic well sampling program, and then following the determination of chromium in domestic wells, provide interim water supply, which PG&E is doing with bottled water, and then finally to implement permanent water supply to residents with affected wells. Just to give you some facts, the most recent monitoring report we received shows that 225 domestic wells were sampled during wintertime. And of that 225, 10 wells exceeded the background levels of 3.1 hexavalent chromium and 3.2 total chromium. Many of these wells have had that detection ongoing for a number of quarters. So we've been seeing this and watching that number, and it's pretty much staying consistent. In addition, PG&E report states that bottled water is being provided to 302 residences. A new development is that the executive officer issued an order recently that changed the bottled water detection limit for hexavalent chromium from 0.06 to 1.2 parts per billion. And that was due to the manufacturer of that bottled water that was out of PG&E's control. And sometimes there is a range of hexavalent chromium in the water. So part of the domestic well sampling program is that PG&E conduct quarterly sampling. And in March, PG&E requested to cease sampling 91 inactive domestic wells on properties that had recently purchased. And the criteria for selecting those 91 wells was that the chromium concentration was less than 2 parts per billion, and the inactive domestic well was near a monitoring well that was also being sampled, so it was almost a duplication of effort. So on June 26th, the assistant executive officer sent a letter that conditionally accepted PG&E's proposal, with the exception that 6 domestic wells continue to be in the sampling program because they didn't meet the above criteria. And also it stated that board staff had no objection to PG&E abandoning inactive domestic wells that were screened across both the lower and the upper aquifer for the purpose of preventing cross-contamination should any kind of waste be put into those wells. So earlier when I showed you that plume map and I mentioned the PG&E's groundwater extraction that was containing the chromium plume south of Thompson Road, PG&E is currently operating 6 of these land treatment units for chromium treatment and northern plume control. And I listed these fields, and I'll show you on the next slide where these fields are located on a map. But wanted to point out that the latest monitoring reports show that the annual average pumping rate is about just slightly under 1,200 gallons per minute. It's decreased, of course, in the wintertime, and, of course, it increased more in summer when the fields are growing and it's hotter. But this is the significant change why we feel that chromium plume has been contained, because PG&E has so expanded the groundwater pumping, and they're doing it 12 months a year rather than just 8 months a year, which was done for 20 years previously. So we feel that this has had a significant effect on the chromium plume. And this map shows where those fields are located. This is the Desert View Dairy, which has been the subject of a number of WDRs presented to this board. And then south of here, at that location, is the ranch field on the north side of Highway 58. And then jumping up, this is the Cottrell Field, and these two up here on the north are the Gorman Fields. This blue line represents the chromium plume boundary in that area. And this road up here is Thompson Road, where the chromium plume is being contained from further migration north. There has been a new field that was added just this spring, and this field is called the Yang Field. And this was added to further help with the groundwater extraction and the plume control. Going on to the cleanup and abatement order that was amended in June 2012, that was the order that we called the whole house replacement water order. And that states for PG&E to provide permanent whole house replacement water to residents with detectable chromium in their domestic well within either in the plume or within 1 mile of the plume boundary. So PG&E tells us that currently there are 362 eligible residences in the whole house replacement water order. Of those, 9 residences have an operating water filter system that is filtering the chromium out of the water before the water goes into the house. And then PG&E has plans to install and get operating 29 more of those water filter systems before the cleanup and abatement order deadline of August 31st, next month. 263 property owners chose PG&E's offer of property purchase instead of the water filter system. And currently, PG&E is in negotiations with the last 120 property owners, so all the remaining property transactions have already occurred. And lastly, 6 property owners decided to completely opt out of both the water filter system for the house and the property purchase program. Most of these people have elected just to continue receiving bottled water. In March of last year, the Water Board accepted as part of the administrative civil liability settlement, a supplemental environmental project in which PG&E proposed to modify and upgrade the drinking water system at the Hinckley School. Well, despite the Hinckley School having closed on July 1st this year permanently, the Barstow Unified School District and the Community Advisory Committee requested that PG&E be required to continue upgrading the water system in case the school's use changes in the future. So PG&E is continuing to make plans to upgrade and improve the drinking water system, with construction of that to be completed by the end of this year. And then following testing and shakedown of the system, it is expected to be handed over to the school district in 2014. Going on to the revised background chromium study, we're still in the planning stages of this. This is something that PG&E has implemented, is pursuing, and the Water Board staff is part of a technical working group that meets monthly in Hinckley. The other members, of course, include PG&E, the Community Advisory Committee, and its consultant, as well as a staff of the U.S. Geological Survey Office out of San Diego. That's Dr. John Isvicki. And one of the items completed is that PG&E prepared a draft framework document for a revised study plan. And all the meeting participants provided comments on that framework document. And then just last month, the State Water Board approved a contract for Dr. John Isvicki to develop the U.S. Geological Survey's tasks and what their role will be in that revised chromium background study in the near future. In between all of this, PG&E has initiated some well sampling of monitoring the wells that are currently in place to kind of find out what data gaps remain and what needs to be done in the future to implement the revised background study. The last box you see, that is what involves you. Board staff plans to bring you an informational item in the future when a final chromium background study plan is in place. We have another issue we wanted to bring to your attention, and that is we're seeing increasing chromium concentrations in the west of the freshwater barrier. And let me orientate you where we are in this map. Down on the bottom is Highway 58. On the west side is Hinckley Road. The east side is Mountain View Road. And on the north, you see some of the railroad tracks. In the middle of all of that is a red dashed line. and that represents the freshwater barrier that PG&E is implementing by injecting fresh water from south of the compressor station that's been piped north and putting that into 5 injection wells for the purpose of creating mounding on the groundwater for preventing westward migration of the chromium plume. This is the boundary of the chromium plume from third quarter 2012, and it's on the east side of the barrier, which is where it was expected to be. However, starting fourth quarter and into first quarter of this year, chromium was being detected in 3 monitoring wells on the west side of supposedly the barrier. And what we've noticed over time is that we're seeing an increasing trend in the chromium concentrations in these wells. For instance, I put up this graph to show you for monitoring well 121D. We're seeing that the concentration increased from middle of 2011 from 1.5, and it's currently being detected at 3.3. And this increasing trend indicates to staff that this is not a naturally occurring chromium concentration from the aquifer, because otherwise we would see more of a slight up and down, and a flat trend. But instead, we're seeing a very consistent increasing trend. And just to point out, this is another monitoring well closer to the red dashed line, and monitoring well 169, where chromium increased to 3.6 parts per billion. And in the west, the farthest west monitoring well is 153, and that one increased first quarter to 4.2 parts per billion. So this is one of the areas where PG&E has been directed to do further plume investigation, and they have a few more monitoring wells planned for installation sampling to better define the plume boundary in this location. So our next actions, following adoption of the environmental impact report, board staff plans to prepare tentative waste discharge requirements for comprehensive site cleanup of the chromium in the aquifer. And that will be followed by a draft cleanup and abatement order that will set directives and deadlines for the cleanup. It'll be how much and how fast. And then the last item we plan is the one I mentioned before, where we plan to renew the informational item on the revised background chromium study when the plan has been set. And I'll be glad to answer any questions you have.
Thank you. I think what we're going to do is take the presentation from each of the parties presenting, and then the board will ask questions with respect to all of them. So, representative of PG&E.
Good evening, board members. My name is Kevin Sullivan. I'm the remediation project manager for the Hinckley site. I'm going to keep my remarks fairly brief tonight. We have a lot in front of us. I just have a few maps that cover some of the same ground that Lisa Dernbach's presentation did, so I don't have any written materials for you to review. I wanted to just give you a high-level update on some of the activities that we are doing. I want to be respectful of your time and keep this fairly brief. There's an awful lot of activity going on at the site. On any given day now, we have between 50 to 80 workers out there. A tremendous amount of well drilling going on, sampling crews out there. We've been doing biological surveys as part of the long-term permitting process that the EIR that hopefully you're going to approve tonight is a key part of. We've been doing botanical surveys, endangered species surveys. We've also been doing a lot of remediation work, as Ms. Dernbach mentioned, expanding the agricultural units with the new Yang unit coming on. Drilling new extraction wells to better target our remediation. So for the last 3 months, it's been an extremely busy place down there at Hinckley. In terms of the remediation, we have expanded this Yang Agricultural Unit. One of the things that I think we'll be continuing to work with board staff over the next year is that right now a lot of our remediation is sort of focused on the edges of the plume with the primary goal of that containment that Ms. Dernbach spoke about. I think we'd really like to kind of focus in, as some of the board members had directed before, to focus in on some of the higher concentration materials out there. We've made some good progress in terms of the lower aquifer remediation. We'd like to continue that and address some of these areas in the core. I think it's important that you're also aware that in terms of the in-situ treatment, which you've heard a lot of discussion about, we're sort of in a holding pattern on that right now. We're not expanding that any further right now, pending a manganese investigation that the board has directed, and again, trying to address community concerns. We think that's a good tool that we'd like to put back to use, but as of right now, we're sort of on hold with further expansion of that. I'd like to elaborate a little bit on the background study activities that have been going on. We've been meeting, some of the technical team has actually been meeting twice a month since January with Dr. Izbicki and the technical representatives from the CAC. There has been a lot of technical information exchange, and I think what we're finding that I'd like to at least make the board aware of is that the site, as we know, is very complicated. We've preliminarily sort of divided the area of the Hinckley Valley into sort of three different geological areas. There's nothing special about this, but we're finding that there's going to be different questions that need to be answered in these different areas. We've designated them with the west, the east, and the north. And I think the important thing that I'd like to raise to you is that we're seeing more and more that the 3.1 number, it's something that we really need to look at kind of softly, because we realize that that is not an accurate reflection of all the conditions that are out there. In the area on the west there, for example, that Ms. Dernbach was speaking about, up gradient from there in areas that haven't been affected by water from the compressor station, we find chromium concentrations of 8. Okay, so we're really trying to kind of focus our near-term remedial efforts on the stuff that we know is clearly from the compressor station, what we call the plume core. And I think over the next coming years, as we work with the USGS and others, we're going to get a lot more clarity about what's happening in that 0 to 5 ppb range. I think we're seeing that there's evidence that there's several different possible mechanisms that are going on out there that may take some time to tease out. And again, I'm here to report what I think is positive progress, that we've got a good dialogue, I think we've got a good team working on it with the USGS, the Water Board, and the community, but it's going to take some time. To that end, just sort of a preview of coming attractions, this is very new data that I don't want to overinterpret, because we have a technical meeting tomorrow with this group, but we're starting to look at different water isotopes. You'll remember us talking about trying to fingerprint the water and so that we can see where the water's come from, where it's going to. And what you see here is that just looking at some of the isotopes of oxygen and deuterium, we're starting to find groupings of, yellow is sort of one type of water, if you will. The blue seems to be indicating another type of water. We're doing this with multiple lines of evidence and going to try to sew this together so that we can get a much better feel for where PG&E's chromium is, where it's been, and importantly, where it's going. I believe that the Water Board staff is planning to have Dr. Izbicki come at a future meeting to kind of give you an overview of this. We're really supportive of that. We think that, we want to give the space for this scientific process to continue. And then lastly, just, pardon me, hit the wrong button again. There we go. Just a slight update in the last week, I think, since maybe Ms. Dernbach got her numbers on the whole house replacement water system. You know, the systems that have been put in were up to 37 eligible households with a treatment system. 14 units have been turned over, and we're on target. All the units are actually on site now, and we're on target to have those all in place by August 31st. And again, these are units that are designed to treat that water all the way down to that 0.06 ppb, which, as far as I know, I think this is the only place in California that we're treating to that level. But those units have been achieving those levels. We've been bringing them online during startup and then turning them over to the residents. So that's really all I had. Happy to take questions at the end if that's the best one. Thank you for your time.
Thank you.
And have representatives of the Community Advisory Committee.
And I'm the chairman of the board of the Community Advisory Committee, and I wanted to come in and give you guys a short presentation on our progress for the last year or so. And I thought we'd start out. These are the notes of our accomplishments and our goals and our path forward with our group here. And let's go to the next slide. We just want to let the board know that the Community Advisory Committee here is to serve our community, and the CAC is down to 5 members, but we're getting ready to do some more interviews and go up. And I just want to let you know that the existing, the old board members that had recently stepped off are engaging in our community and being very positive. Like John Quas, for example, is working on the school issues and trying to keep the school back in the hands of the community. Excuse me. And and he's working on, also we're waiting on an update for the 7-Eleven committee on the school issues. And John Turner also was on the board, and Dave Cheney. And they're now engaged in the senior hall, and they're the president and the vice president of the senior hall. And Darren Banks is also working with Dr. John Isbicki on the background study. He's working with the CAC. And I just want you to know that the CAC has worked tirelessly on this project and trying to make a difference in our community. And we're building awareness of different issues. I'm getting way ahead of myself here. I'm sorry about that. We're conducting our community meetings, monthly meetings with a project navigator. And let me go on here. I'm just using slides, so sorry. We're still having our weekly CAC meetings, and we have, as of recently, stopped having our Tuesday meetings. It just became too much of a drain on us, our board members. And we're building awareness in different issues surrounding the cleanup and sharing information from our community to the Water Board and PG&E. And we're developing a better understanding of issues in our community for water remediation and treatment. We're also dealing in our community with county issues, and we're also dealing with state issues, dealing with the highways and things of that nature. And so there are other things in our community that's going on besides just water. And also air quality issues we're dealing with the Air Quality Control Board. And we as the CAC members are sharing these this information, and we're learning through technical meetings and other CAC meetings that we're having to our community. and we as the CAC members believe we are on the right path forward. There's just, we do have a lot of concerns still, though, in our community. And for example, one of the main concerns that we're having is property values in our community. The time that it's going to take to treat this water means that people in Hinckley will not get their property values back for quite some time, and if at all. And some of our seniors in our community, this would mean that they would not receive their property values back in their lifetimes, and that's a very sad thing. So we're submitting a short form right now to the Mojave Water Agency, the ERWOP plan, and we'll be submitting that short form later this week. And let me just go through some of these slides real quick here. Our accomplishments are proving the improved plume definition to the north and the east and the west. Commented on the draft of the EIR. Helped our community members better understand plume migration. Continue the SET program at the school. And despite closure of the school, CDC own inspection of domestic wells. We had the community had pitched in pro bono, and we went around and sampled people's wells, and we got some data of our own and submitted it to the Lahontan Water Board. We advocated for experts to help us understand critical issues. We had a toxicologist come and explain the health effects of Chrome 6. Dr. Janice Jonas Bickey of the USGS to assist us in Chrome 6 background study. We're pushing for an extended sample of manganese to better understand the source of the impacts of the black water in our community. And it's a real touchy situation with our community members because we just don't necessarily like black water getting on our children. It's just simple as that. And we are set up technical exchange meetings with Lahontan Water Board, USGS, and PG&E at the IRP office. And we had a community barbecue for our community, and we had a great time at it. It was a good turnout, and that's my son, by the way, in the bottom left-hand corner. And our goals are to improve plume definition, USGS long-term independent participation in the background study, ensure that the IRZ is not leaking byproducts such as manganese, and we want to make sure and feel reassured that the EIR has scope and the right remedy. And the focus on health issues, we need to continue to focus on those health issues because it's an extreme problem in our community. And we want to try to engage, as our goals, engage in health outreach, make technical education through our IRP manager and staff as a top priority, and have more barbecues with our community. And our path forward is to continue monthly meetings at community meetings and refine and improve meeting structure located at future public meeting sites. So the school is closing, so we're trying to continue to keep that building, but if we lose that building, then we don't know how, where we're going to have it, basically. There's a few places in mind, but we're going to work on that. Maintain good working relationship with all government agencies. We want to maintain open dialogue with the county supervisor's office. Continue working with the Water Quality Control Board in Victorville to better understand these black water issues and resolve community concerns about the whole house water replacement. We want to work with the community to find solutions to the school's closure. We would like to keep the school and reopen it again one day. And here's my closing statement, or my words on the presentation I had for you. As volunteers, the CDC does its best to bring forward accurate information to help our community, family, and friends better understand the issues connected to getting clean, drinkable water for our town, so we can live in relative peace with one another and work towards a hopeful future. It has been an honor for the CDC to serve the Hinckley community. And at the end of this, I actually had a couple more things now as a concerned citizen and a community member. I'll make this really brief, and I'll just get straight to the point here. The CAC and the community would like the board, you guys, to continue to, or skip the line there, sorry about that. We'd like the board to insist or put into orders for PG&E to continue to draw plume lines around any monitoring wells above the 3.1 number. And then it has been said amongst PG&E, and they just said it, that that number is really inaccurate, so we'd like that to be dropped down to the average number so we can get the little plume circles that they put around. We'd like more a visual of it so our community can see this. And yes, the average was 1.2. That's why the USGS has been put into place, is so we can get this background study going and get more accurate numbers. So we would like to have this number. While we understand a new background study is underway, we would like to see the plume maps drawn. The USGS, the average 1.2 plume, chrome 6 concentrations for plume for planning purposes. And also we have another concern of these uranium issues that are in these fields. And we know that in the EIR, what it says about them, you know, there's a lot in there about it. But we would just, as these fields are coming up and the ag fields are coming up, we would like them to just be monitored and watched in case there's a trend in uranium. And I know it's the 238, and you know, and it's supposed to be non-radioactive, but we would still like this as concerned citizens to make sure that this uranium is monitored as you guys put these ag fields in or approve this EIR. We'd just like to see those things, you know, go into place so we can monitor that and be aware of what's going on in those. And also with the ag fields is another concern is the plume drawdown. And I know that PG&E will say they're going to control it hydraulically, and that the wells won't be drawn down in our community. But we see to the west what their hydraulic pumping does. It doesn't necessarily always keep things from moving around. So let's see if I have anything else here. Oh, yes. And we just wanted to let the board know that we do appreciate the Lahontan Water Board stepping in and helping us negotiate a contract for a facilitator, and the need for the facilitator is extremely high. CCP has been tremendous in implementing and explaining the language, and we see a need to have every meeting facilitated, including the technical working group meetings, and we believe that CCP can handle this, and we would like to see CCP to continue with all of these meetings, and that's all I have for tonight.
Thank you very much. Mr. Webster?
Hi, good evening. My name's Ian Webster. I'm the IRP, Independent Review Panel Manager, basically a consultant to the community and the Community Advisory Committee. By going last, I have the advantage of trying to selectively pick bits and pieces that will hopefully expand and amplify some of the stuff going before. I have some slides. I think you've probably got them in your package in front of you, so I'll go through them with varying speed. Some are more complicated than others. I'll start by saying the main mission tonight, obviously, is to discuss the environmental impact report. From my IRP perspective, it's a good document, and scores of eyes have spent thousands of hours perusing the document and modifying it to the point of clarity. But from my personal opinion, the document is more than an EIR. It's very carefully worded as a comprehensive groundwater cleanup strategy. And so the remarks I'm going to make here tonight are somewhat tied to the fact that the EIR, where it takes place here in the middle of 2013, it's trying to forecast ahead scores, if not 100 years, of planned remediation of this plume. So decision-making now around this document has to be very flexible and adaptable in the pathway ahead. So as you approve this thing tonight, please consider the flexibility required in the document to make it a manageable living document in the years long ahead of us. The title of my talk, and I guess, you know, with the slides in front of you, I'll try and be brief, You know, the Hinckley Valley has lived with the presence of the Chrome 6 plume for decades. It's been my role in the past year and a half since I've been in the project to try and improve the technical understanding of the community, distinct from input from PG&E. I meet with them alone, I brief them, I give them my candid opinions. I believe there is an understanding more of what is going on in the community, but as the title of my talk says, there is still remaining skepticism. There's a long-seated belief on what went on in this valley, but I think with an improved technical understanding and the remedy underway and goals being met, things are improving overall in terms of technical communication. Let me go to the next slide. I guess I would do it by the right button. No. Right side of the ring. Go ahead. Okay. All right. This slide, which you can peruse in front of you, contains a number of bullets, but again, the key words here are independent. My mission is technical input. Yes, there is skepticism. I am paid by PG&E, but I don't believe that basically affects the autonomy of how I can give remarks to the community. I've had ups and downs in the terms of my credibility with the community, but I think I've stood my ground basically and given them candid advice through time. The key things in this slide are, and I won't get into the details of the remedy, but towards the end there are three bullets that I wish you to focus on as the water board. But beyond remedy selection, WDRs and cleanup and abatement orders, there has to be agreements put into place that have teeth. And the teeth include such things as appropriate long-term monitoring, clearly established treatment goals, and an adaptive management approach. There's a lot of schooling around adaptive management, and I think it's a discipline that requires to be brought to this project. Let me try and move more quickly through some of the slides that will give you some input into what's been going on in the past year, which is what Laurie Kemper asked me to do. So the CAC selected the IRP manager back in early 2012. My mission's pretty clear. PG&E was grateful enough to provide us space in Hinckley that we've used on a weekly basis. I sit as the interface between the technical technical parts of the project and basically the community at large. The CAC, represented by Lester here tonight, its membership has varied over the past year and a half, but they've maintained a vigorous close scrutiny, high attention to the technical details of the job, and I would estimate that the CAC has met more than 50 times in the presence of the IRP manager, at least once a week, if not more, as Lester indicated. Just an incredible attention to the technical aspects of the project, and I applaud them for that. We also, the community under leadership of the CAC, meets once a month at the Hinckley School. The attendance has been significant. It varies from perhaps 80 to 120 people. This photograph here is indicative of the interest in these meetings. The plume issues, however, are complicated. As folks here tonight have explained, we have tried to use many different techniques to explain. This is, I think Lisa Dernbach referred to about many parts of the project. As recently as last month, I used a building block approach here with 15 different moving parts of the job. So if you're a community member trying to understand a complicated project and there's 15 moving parts with different schedules and orders, it gets difficult. Independently, your board and staff have held meetings to try and explain to the community what is going on. This particular meeting here was about a community water system that's obviously still high in many community members' minds. Separately, PG&E has done their role too. We have sometimes differing technical opinions, but the dialogue is respectful. The PG&E, for example, has hosted the CAC at various parts of its operations. Here is the CAC touring the IRZ, which is the underground in situ remediation part of the project. Specialty. Let me get this thing to advance. In particularly specific areas, such as whole house water systems, there have been independent meetings from the community meetings. Last year, the IRP manager and the CAC hosted a two-day, over a two-day period, a series of roundtable discussions in the school gymnasium regarding whole house water delivery systems. And again, you can see the number of people showing up for this. The reason for showing you all these slides with people and people is that there's a tremendous, the community is heavily invested and interested in what is going on in the Hinckley Valley. Now, a few technical issues. These are things that I have talked to the CAC and the community about at many meetings, and the Water Board staff and PG&E have been there to listen to. There is still issues regarding plume monitoring confidence and where the plume actually is. But again, as your staff members have indicated tonight, there are clear path ahead plans to install more wells to define areas of low data confidence. Unfortunately, and I'll say this over and over again, I don't think any of us could have forecasted about a year ago about the number of folks who would have left the Hinckley Valley. When I took the position about a year and a quarter ago, the idea was to deliver whole house water to the homes and people would stay in the valley. An unfortunate downside ramification of the program has been that people have found a way out of the valley. Basically, their only way out is to basically sign up for PG&E's property purchase program. It's affecting very significantly the Hinckley community. Where the CAC has been providing input to PG&E, this is kind of an angled view of the plume. Again, Lisa earlier on showed a plan view. I'm showing it slightly with a view looking towards the northwest. And you see that the two-part plume that Lisa Derenbach referred to, split in two as a result of PG&E's containment actions at Thompson Road. But the main areas, for your takeaway from this meeting, the main areas that the community is interested in, and I've modularized in my briefings for them, are basically plume investigation, get it right, where is the Chrome 6 exceeding currently the 3.1 defined number. More wells will decide upon that in the future. Number two, south end, I call it south end treatment. This is what the IRZ is. Knock out the Chrome 6 at the highest concentrations at the source and prevent leakage to the north. Number three, north end treatment. That's the containment that's basically split the plume in two and appears to have had remarkable results over a relatively short period of time. Number four, basically systems for the school. Lisa Derenbach reported to you on that. Number five, the background study. Ultimately, one of the goals that will be set is to bring the concentrations back to background levels. Kevin Sullivan from PG&E gave you a little indication of where that program is going. We're going slow to go fast. Everyone believes this is the last great chance to get the numbers established for the Hinckley Valley for cleanup. And so USGS, Water Board, PG&E, CAC and community are all heavily invested in getting this study correct. And number six is the manganese issue. Again, I think Kevin Sullivan referred to it. The IRZ, unfortunately, creates secondary byproducts. There's been concern about black water / manganese to the west of the core plume. More monitoring wells are installed to try and improve the containment in that area. These are the main things, in summary, that I have talked about with the community in 50, 60, perhaps, briefings. The IRP, my professional, personal views on the path ahead, and it's tied to, I guess, your EIR considerations later on tonight. The EIR picks, I guess the word is a preferred or the best possible solution. I think it's 4B in the EIR. But in general, the remedial strategy, again, the word that's used in the document that's been pursued here is hit the Chrome 6 hard at the source and knock it out there, thereby limiting northern migration. Execute plume containment and use ag treatment further down the spine of the plume to treat the lower concentrations. So the IRP manager's opinions are as follows. Number A, knock out the Chrome 6 at the source, and that's what is happening through this IRZ system. This is a clear but complicated diagram. It actually shows the plume shape again from a view looking towards the northeast, and the core of the plume, that 50 ppb core, is shown right here in this blob. I won't give you time to study it, but take my word, it's pretty accurate. Then Point number two, further down the plume, treat the low chrome 6 concentrations with what I'm referring to as a sustainable, it's a word I'll start to use now in my small remarks here, sustainable solution. I view the solution here in Hinckley needs to be compatible with the long-term lifestyle of the valley, and within that is a green remedy with sustainable components compatible with the lifestyle and economics of the valley. So the use of ag treatment units, basically farming to remove chrome 6, is a very sustainable solution for this part of the world. Define the background number. I've referred to that before. This gentleman here is Dr. Isbicki, that we have a lot of faith in, to assist us in an ombudsman way regarding what are the background numbers for cleanup. So, into my last few slides here, I think that the EIR does this. The remedy here is more than technical. It is a combination of considerations to achieve a long-term sustainable remedy that also considers environmental, political, cultural, and economic considerations. And there's some bullets towards the end there. I think the preferred remedy does that. And some long-term remarks here to move ahead. In the position that the board, I think, sits in, I mean, you have a duty to look into the long-term horizon. And you probably, as you've reviewed some of the briefings on the EIR, this is a decades, 20-year, 50, 60-year solution that's been put into place like now. But any engineer can't predict what's going to happen 50, 60 years from now. So the codification documents that you put into place must be sufficiently flexible that they can see engineering improvements and changes down the road. So some of the things that I think need to be considered from a much higher level, I mean, in conclusion here, the adaptive management approach, which is now part of the environmental engineering world, is that basically as you collect more data, you don't know what the data's going to be like in the future, as you collect more data, the frame of the remedy you have picked is flexible enough to adapt to that new data and solve the problem. And I think, for example, the ag units are a perfect example of a flexible adaptive management system. Community involvement is extremely important. This remedy will go on for decades. The community will evolve with this remedy, working alongside them. And so basically the a mechanism for the community to stay in touch, as has happened in the past 2 years, vitally important. And then I think, you know, what PG&E has signaled to the CAC and to the community is that the company is willing to work with the CAC, the community, and all stakeholders to define the future of Hinckley. And I think it's getting, we're on the edge of being able to define what that future might be. And I urge all parties to probably get together and start working on that beyond just the remedy, as the remedy sits in the middle of it. So I can save detailed remarks on this horizons curve to the latter part of the agenda regarding the EIR, but this is a major takeaway. It's not in your slide deck, and I can talk about it right now briefly, or I can defer to the open public comment period.
I think if this primarily focuses on the agenda item 11, which is the EIR certification, then it might fit in there perhaps better.
All right. So in conclusion, as the IRP manager, I would ask you to consider the sustainability of any future remedy selection in the Hinckley Valley. And thank you for your attention and time tonight. Appreciate it.
Thank you very much for the presentation. What I'd like to do now is ask if there are any questions from individual board members or any of the representatives who made presentations. Mr. Dias?
Yes, thank you. I've got a question for Lisa Dernbach. On your slide 4, you indicated that the plume in the lower aquifer is actually decreasing in concentrations. And I'd like to ask if you know which of the PGE remediation methods you'd credit for this reduction.
Yes, in that instance, for the lower aquifer, PG&E installed and is operating 2 extraction wells installed in the upper aquifer, and by pulling the water through the depths of the upper aquifer, it actually is doing a reverse process in the lower aquifer. It's causing the water to go up from the lower aquifer to the upper aquifer, and it's preventing that lower aquifer plume from expanding.
So do you think then that the reduction in concentrations is simply a movement of the chrome to a different aquifer? It's not really eliminating?
Correct, because the chromium in that location is in, it's in both aquifers at that one location. It's in the lower and the upper. And by PG&E's extraction wells in the upper, it's preventing the lower from migrating with groundwater or expanding. And by pulling it up through the upper aquifer, which already has the chromium, they're reducing the concentrations. And we would expect that size to reduce as well with time.
Thank you.
Any other questions, Mr. Dias?
Yes, I have a question for Dr. Webster. Can you explain the association between the appearance of manganese in the water and the in situ treatment that PG&E is conducting?
Yes. When you conduct a reductive process, reduce the oxygen concentration in the aquifer area where the higher concentrations of arsenic reside, to basically create the chrome 6 to go to chrome 3, secondary reactions also occur in the aquifer, in the natural rock formations, etc. You have probably every element in the periodic table. When you're down there, manganese in an oxide form also becomes readily reduced into an Mn form that is soluble into water and is released into the water and basically is picked up through in PG&E's monitoring wells. It's not solely manganese that is released too. Arsenic is also released in the same locale. The phenomenon of secondary metals being released because of a reductive treatment process in groundwater treatment is a well-known phenomenon. There are tens of sites in California where an organic component is added to the aquifer that causes the microbes to cause a reductive environment, whereupon secondary metals are released. So it's an unfortunate negative downside of reductive treatment, but its lateral extent is significantly less than the plume is trying to treat and can be adequately managed if well engineered.
Thank you. I have no more questions.
Thank you. Any questions, Mr. Sandell?
Yes, sir. For Lisa, I have two questions for you. One is, would you explain what is meant by abandoning a well?
Yes, there are state regulations that dictate the abandonment of wells that were used for water supply. And what typically the case is, the well casing is cut off below the ground surface, and then oftentimes the well casing that remains is backfilled with a grout or a sand or something else. And then the cover is covered over with like cement or something so that there's no access to the remaining casing and the sand in the aquifer.
Okay, thank you. And a second question for you has to do with the filter system that's planned for the Hinckley School. My understanding where we are right now is that if that's built, or it's going to be built, but it's going to be relatively inactive, will it deteriorate just sitting there?
I don't have an answer. I might defer that to PG&E to reply.
Okay, thank you. I have a question for Lester White also.
Do
You mentioned that you did a parallel sampling of various wells, and I wonder how the results that you got for what you found in those wells compared to the monitoring results we've been getting either from the same well or from nearby monitoring wells.
I'm not sure about the monitoring wells, but I do know that on Flower Street there were some wells sampled, and they came out with 140,000, 170,000 parts per million of manganese. And we also tested some in the western, another portion of the western area that were coming up with those high levels also. And PG&E has purchased those people's home, and they had moved out recently. So, and I also had a statement about the abandonment of the wells. One of our concerns in the community is when a well is abandoned like that, when you drill a well, they put pea gravel around the outside of it. So the upper aquifer can continue to contaminate the lower aquifer even though the well has been abandoned. So I believe that I've worked with wells before. So my father used to drill wells. And what has to happen is you need to use like a clay to try to find the upper aquifer and the lower, and add bentonite or some type of synthetic clay to stop that from happening.
But you're saying you need to do something around the outside of
yes,
the well casing, not just on the inside?
That's correct. There's usually they put pea gravel around the outside casing of the well.
Are there techniques or to be able to do that? Or
you would probably have to talk to a well expert on that, so I'm not really,
Do you know if that's what's being done for abandoning wells here?
I'm not sure about that. Okay. You have to refer that question.
Thank you.
All right.
That's all I have.
Any questions, Mr. Jardine?
I see the PG&E representative nodding his head as we talked about abandoning wells. Could you make a statement on that?
Yeah, thank you, Kevin Sullivan, PG&E. On the well abandonment question, I felt really good about the process we worked through with the board staff and the community. There's a tension between wanting to leave wells there so that we can monitor them in the future to see changes versus the wells that are screened across two aquifers. Those could become potential conduits. That lesson's been learned on many other contaminated sites. So those wells, the state's abandonment regulations require you to seal up both the pipe in the well and the gravel around, either by pressure grouting. You inject a very thin cement so it fills up that pea gravel part, or you do what's called over drilling, and so you drill out all that and then you replace it with a concrete plug. So that, and the board's approval letter, we had prioritized a few wells that we go in with a TV, a log, we go down and we look to see where the screens are, and we had put sort of our the ones we were most worried about on a special list, and suggested that the benefit of abandoning them outweighed the benefit of future monitoring. I think in general the board staff kind of concurred with that. So that's where we're going.
Thank you.
And also on the question about the school water supply, right now the idea is that there'll be a freshwater system piped up to the school, so there shouldn't be a lot of deterioration. It should be able to be more or less mothballed should the school decide to use that facility in the future for whatever purpose.
Any questions, Ms. Cox?
Thank you. I'm coming a little late into the game, so forgive me if some of these questions are remedial. Looking at slide 5 and 6 that Lisa presented, there's a question that still remains about the extent of the plume. And your slide number 6 talks about, looks like 22 wells, monitoring wells, I'm assuming. Is there a time frame yet established for the implementation of those monitoring wells?
No, because that directive was issued to PG&E under an investigative order, we can only set a deadline for a technical report submittal. So it's up to PG&E to develop their own timeline for installing the monitoring wells, sampling the monitoring wells, but to get us the data by the deadline that we set.
So it's coming up pretty soon now.
Yeah, October 30th.
Okay, and in the discussions, I've heard requests from PG&E to be soft on the background level of 3.1. They mentioned 8. The community group mentioned 1.2. Seems to be quite a disparity there. How will that be resolved? Lori, maybe you can educate me a little bit on that.
Yeah, sure. Yes, the 8 that PG&E referred to was a concentration they saw in the west of the current sort of plume boundary. So they were referring to a specific location where the levels may be higher naturally. However, right now, from the board's perspective, the board basically identified that background in the Hinkley Valley range from non-detect to 3.1. So 3.1 represents the maximum background concentration based on the data that PG&E used a few years back to establish background. And then the 1.2, the number that the community was asking for the lines to be drawn, is the average of the wells that were measured a few years back. That background study that PG&E conducted only used domestic wells. It didn't use monitoring wells. And so I think PG&E is saying there is more potential variability out there, and that's what this new background study would look at. All these different areas maybe, and there's nothing in the water code that requires us to pick a single number, so we may reconsider those numbers and apply them to distinct, geographic areas or zones or even depth within the groundwater. So the challenge right now is that study is not underway. There's some investigation work going on, and the study plan is going to come before the board, and then the study is likely to take a couple of years. So right now, we're basically moving ahead with the numbers that the board established in 2008, which was the 1.2 average, 3.1 maximum. And one of the challenges we've talked with the community about in trying to draw the plume line now, all the lines you've seen tonight represent where the water is 3.1. So what the lines mean is that water inside those lines are greater than 3.1, and water outside those lines are generally less than 3.1. And the community has said we'd like to have lines drawn showing where the 1.2 is, but inherent in knowing that it's average, if that's the average natural background, then it makes it difficult to draw lines because basically the groundwater, how far do we go? Because if the natural groundwater is 1.2, or ranges between 0 and 3, then we could be going a long ways out to try to find where the 1.2 concentrations exist, because we would expect them to exist naturally in the aquifer. So the line may not represent anything that has to do with PG&E's discharges. So we basically said, back when we decided 3.1 was maximum, we basically said anything above that, we're going to assume belongs to PG&E, even though that may or may not be completely accurate if there's more variability than we realize.
And just to clarify, that boundary line that's drawn is the maximum of either chromium 6 to 3.1 or total chromium to 3.2.
So if I'm understanding correctly, PG&E has to submit the results from their monitoring wells by October 30th, 2013. So then my last question would be for Mr. Sullivan from PG&E is, are you on target for meeting that requirement, and where are you placing those monitoring wells? Because I would think further identification of the extent of the plume would be critical to any resolution here.
Yes, it is. And as I mentioned before, that there's a lot of activity going on right now. There's about 4 different drill rigs that are moving out there. We've cored many of the locations. As we go to the north, we're in up towards Harper Lake. We're in sort of a geologic area it's somewhat new to the project. So we've been taking core. We've been working with USGS to preserve that core so that they can do further tests on it. There's a very detailed map that I don't have accessible, but that's been shared, and there's been, I think, good back and forth discussion with both Water Board technical staff and the CAC. We have some challenges in locating wells due to biological permit issues. One of the big things that the EIR will do will tee us up with California Fish and Game and Fish and Wildlife Services to get biological take permits. That's a multi-year process, so if we, for some reason, are still locating wells in 2016, I think we'll have a much freer hand to be able to do that. Right now, we have to both get landowner access and not take any habitat. So we're largely limited to roads, pre-existing trails, things like that. But I would say the majority of those wells are in or being installed, and we're on track to meet the October 30th time frame.
Any questions, Dr. Horn?
You know I have questions. If the chair will indulge me, I would like to take a moment for us all to reflect how far we've come in 2 years. Think back to where we were 2 years ago. And in that time, since then, the Citizen Advisory Committee has formed countless tens of, I mean, who knows how many hours, person hours, have gone into weekly meetings, monthly meetings, sharing information, discussing issues. A lot of hard work has been done, and I commend all of you for hanging in there and doing this hard work, because we really can't, I mean, it's really essential to this process going well, is all the hard work you are doing. In addition, the expertise of Project Navigator has been added to the team, the expertise of USGS in the form of Dr. Izbecki. There's a facilitator working with the CAC now, and the result of all of this hard work we can see tonight, and I think we all deserve a pat on the back for all that hard work. Quick clarification question for Mr. Sullivan about the in-situ. You said that right now you are holding on in-situ pending the manganese investigation, and what I want to clarify is whether the existing in-situ treatment units are operating, and what you were meaning was that you weren't expanding the in-situ. Is that correct?
Correct. In the source area where we're trying to clean up the highest concentrations, the design concept is that you inject carbon into a given area and you get most of your benefit within the first few months of that area. So you sort of clean that area, move on to the next area, move on to the next area. We're not moving on to the next area right now. We're maintaining injections within those same areas. Those hit a point of diminishing return. So in that regard, we're not drilling new wells to expand it pending results of the manganese investigation.
Thank you for that clarification. And then a question for Ms. Dernbach about the revised background chromium study. As the investigation of this proposed study is being developed, does that include an estimation of the levels of certainty that any new investigation of the background chromium levels would have? So, in other words, you know, is the result of a new study going to give us any more certainty about what background levels are than we have at present time?
We can't answer that question now, because the revised study hasn't been formulated yet. As we go to complete that work plan, hopefully by the end of this year, that was the presentation we were hoping to bring you, and at that time we would be able to answer that question, or we were also hoping for Dr. Izbecki's expertise at that time to tell us how much certainty there would be in a new background number. So right now I can't answer. We're hoping that the revised study plan will provide better confidence in a background number, but what that confidence level is at this point, we don't know.
Yeah. I recall when we first discussed this, whenever that was, I mean, there was some concern on the board that that a new study may not really resolve the concerns people have about the number. So it was like, let's take this step, let's develop a proposal and see what's involved in that proposal, and then decide whether or not to proceed with conducting the study. That's my recollection of the board's decision.
Yes, and that proposal is the plan that I'm talking about. So we're not at that end proposal stage yet. I want to make clear that this revised background study is not being required of the Water Board. This is being undertaken by PG&E by their own initiative. It's up to them. They're funding it, and as we mentioned before, they're also funding the contract that we use to contract with the USGS for their participation. But we have no orders for this study. We have no deadlines or directives or anything. So PG&E is undertaking it on their own.
Maybe I could help.
Well, no, I mean, I just want to...
Good evening, Dr. Horn. My name is Ann Holden. We developed a scope of work that is to direct for Dr. Izbecki's work in the background study, and one portion of the scope of work for the contract with him is that he needs to let us know what sort of management questions will be addressed through the background study and the level of confidence in answering those questions. And so that is part of the contract with him between the Lahontan Water Board and Dr. Izbecki. So when we come to you with the informational item in hopefully the fall or early winter, we plan to have Dr. Izbecki come and address that question as far as the confidence level in the study.
Without those estimates of the levels of confidence, I don't think the board can make an informed decision.
I agree.
Thank you.
Any further questions, Dr. Horn?
No, thank you.
Thank you. It's nice to be last because everybody does your work before you have an opportunity to do it. I'd like to ask Mr. Smith if he could lead us through the public comments on this agenda item now.
Thank you. I have four speaker cards, so if anybody else has not filled out a speaker card for this item, I've got more speaker cards for the other items. But for item 9, if you have a question or a comment and wish to speak, please fill one out and get it to us. But what I'm going to do is I'll start calling the folks one at a time in the order that I've received these. So the first speaker card is for Larry Drake.
Yes, my name is Larry Greep, and I've been on the CAC committee. I have a concern. I would say it's with a board member. White Piper's been doing a pretty good job, as far as I can tell, and what I think. And in our process, we've had a concern for going farther east. Well, Lori was all for it, and one of her associates, they were all for it. One of the people on the water board, they overruled her. Well, I think that's kind of a dereliction of duty and probably paying favoritism to PG&E. The goal, for you water board people as taxpayers, this money goes towards your wages, and we have good faith that you're making good decisions. I think any kind of a stopgap for a person to hinder anything that would help the people of Hinckley, to where we can arrive at all the contamination and how far east, west, north it goes, I don't think should be hindered or stopped. I think all of the family wells in this Hinckley area should be tested outside the area that PG&E wants to go. Because during high water levels through 50 years, your water's at more pressure. All of this contamination would be pushed to the farthest extent that it could go, east, west, north. Now when the water recedes a little bit, now you have all of them concentration points. They're all of those, they're all laying in these pockets, nooks, crevices, crannies, wherever. And they're there. So then when you start doing a little pumping, disturbing the water or anything, and it raises or something, you have disturbances. now some of these far Hawaiian areas could start coming back. They might say, oh, well, they're coming from another source. But after 50 years of shoving this stuff all over, where do you think it really is? Now, they just want to hang on to this plume area. But I think they need to expand and test all the wells of Hinkley. All of them. Why nitpick? I mean, it's cost-wise more efficient for PG&E at SEIR. I'm not in total agreement with it. For the simple fact is, for about 5 years or more now, you've had the ethanol injection. This causes arsenic and manganese. So you could take like 3 glasses and fill them with the chromium-6 contamination, the arsenic contamination, and the manganese. Which one would you like to drink? Arsenic is a little more of a silent killer of your organs and stuff than the rest of them. So when something like that happens and you're doing a cleanup, like in the past people have done that, they find a contaminant they've added. But usually to the intelligence of the people that the people entrust, and the engineers and all these educated people, they'll say, oh, we need to use another alternative, which happens. So this ethanol should be stopped, completely stopped, and they could use one of about 4 other alternatives that don't cause arsenic. So my contention is the ZIR should not be voted on in its entirety now, because you got 5 years of a known contaminant that they have added that was not there and that we don't deserve. So I think that should be stopped, should be part of the ERZ, the Environmental Impact Report, and that should be put into it before it is taken into aspect for its entirety. A few more months now of setting that aside, how much difference is that going to make to the getting this done? I mean, the Chrome 6 going to be here 50, 100 years? That's like a few more months or even a year of just taking and getting all this stuff documented and get this done and protect the citizens of Hinkley. Because this is like an isolated thing. This isn't like something where you say, hey, we got all these background levels all over the state. Okay? This is not all over the state. This is a disaster area in Hinkley. Should be treated like that, and no more contaminants should be allowed. Now, I know sometimes you do that in the aspect of cleaning something up, but then you stop it and say, hey, why should we arsenic for the people, manganese for the people, when it's not necessary? Because there is other alternatives. And you people, very easy for you people to find that out. Just can call them impact by environmental people. There's so many things that your hands that you could get to document this, they'd probably tell you the same thing. Why not just stop it? Do the alternative. Because all it would take, they could stop today, be pumping something else in there tomorrow. That's how easy it is. That's all I have to say.
Okay, the next speaker cards for Penny Harper.
Good evening, Water Board. I'm a Hinkley resident. I'm one of the original founding members of the Citizens Advisory Committee. And I've lived in the Hinkley area for 19 years. I'm one of the people who is staying here. I'm not selling my property to PG&E. I just want to make it public that I am thankful to PG&E for delivering a whole house water treatment system to my property. I'm one of the 37 people who have decided to use that, but only a few of them have been hooked up. There are 29 of us who have not had our systems hooked up, and I'm looking forward to the end of August when the system will be connected. In the meantime, PG&E has been delivering bottled water, and I'm very grateful for that, but I'm still bathing, laundering, and washing dishes in water that has 2.1 parts per billion chromium-6. There is also 44 parts per billion of arsenic plus measurable amounts of uranium and radon to list the most toxic chemicals in my well water. I do want to point out on the map over there with the plume boundaries, those green lines are 3.1 parts per billion chromium 6, and you'll see the gap between the two outlined areas. That doesn't mean that there's no chromium 6 there. It just means it's less than 3.1. So it's a little misleading. My property is north of the two open lines up at the north end of the map there. Also, I just want to make a quick comment on item 11. I request that the board do certify the EIR so that PG&E can expand its remediation projects. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Okay, the next speaker is for Bobby Morris.
Good evening. My name is Bob Morris. I've lived in Hinckley since 1961. We recently moved to Front, Nevada. I think I was one that Lester was talking about had recently moved away. My thing is with this, how we're saying there's a break at Thompson Road. The only way I know that there's a dam in there is about two and a half years ago, Desert View Dairy had all kinds of trouble with manganese. It was plugging off all their pumps, their water and troughs for the cows, all this kind of stuff. Well, the manganese, as it moves, it plugs everything up. I think what we got is a dam made out of manganese. And now that you see this water running off to the left and to the right, or to the west and east, what it is you got that dam made and it's pushing the water around it. Instead of PG&E coming up with something that magically shut the water off in that area.
Can you speak in here so the translators can translate here?
Oh. Did you get all that? But that was my whole thing on what I listened to what Lisa was saying about it, because I haven't seen anything done that caused a dam. There's nothing that PG&E has done out there that causes a dam. They just want to say that it magically came out and now we have it. Right? What do you say is it Thompson or Lisa?
Reply?
Sure.
Actually, I'm not aware of the manganese problem in the extraction wells at the Desert View Dairy. Doesn't mean that it wasn't there. It just means that I'm not aware. I haven't been informed. Because that's considered like a daily operational matter that isn't usually included in monitoring reports. So I'm just not aware of it.
Oh, okay. I'm done.
Thank you. Mr. Smith?
Okay, our fourth of five cards is for Movida Hernandez.
Good evening, members of the board. My name is Movida Hernandez. I reside at 36236 Sarah Road. I'd like to address you today on the status report, and if I could use the map over here to the left.
I'd ask them to put that up.
Back, I want to say the last quarter of last year, I had requested on at least two occasions to have the map redrawn. As Penny stated, it is very misleading. I would ask that again of you now, that the map be redrawn to show solid lines around the entire area with perhaps a different color of shading showing the lower levels of chromium, so that everybody is consistent with understanding that the plume has not separated and gone away. It has simply, the levels of chromium 6 have gone down, if we could get that done. The other thing that I think that I heard Lisa say is the fact, and these are comments that have been made over many of the monthly meetings by the residents of Hinckley to the west and to the north, that it continues to migrate, and I believe that Lisa stated that it is migrating, even though it's lessening in the gap, It is migrating towards the south, and they also have data, it sounds like, that the chromium concentrations in the western portion are consistent with not background levels. So these are all things I've heard residents from Hinckley state at the meetings before. They wanted to have their wells tested. They were denied. They wanted fresh water delivered. They were denied. And I'm asking at this time that we kind of revisit that. One other thing, and I think this came out in the PG&E slides, the residents of Hinckley have been categorized into two groups. We are either eligible or ineligible to receive assistance for contamination that has not been caused by us. And I think that's absolutely ludicrous. I would implore of you at this time that PG&E be ordered to provide a fresh water system, and that the community of Hinckley be allowed to pursue a community services district to manage that water system so that we can rejuvenate the community of Hinckley. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
And our last speaker is Dan Hendrickson.
Good evening. I'm Dan Hendrickson, the president of Libre Energy. I have been advocating trying electrocoagulation for the most serious parts of the plume for about a year and a quarter now. And I see that there's still some uncertainty, or appears to be uncertainty, as to how well the IRZ treatment is going. And just wanted to tell you that our calculations show that for 7,500 acre feet in the most intense part of plume, 50 to 3,000 parts per billion, can be treated down to 3.1 in about 5 1/4 years. And that would extract most of the chromium 6 from your problem area. Thank you.
Thank you. Do I understand correctly that is the last of the one more?
This speaker card is for Darren Banks.
Chairman, board members, and Ms. Van Horn, thank you. It's been a while. We haven't seen you. So. I just wanted to make a few comments about some things that were said. Number one, the 8 parts per billion that Mr. Sullivan had mentioned in the West, and correct me if I'm wrong, I believe that's on a PG&E-owned property. Is that no? What we have to understand is see the whole picture, because the vast majority of the stuff up gradient of the compressor station is non-detect. Okay, so when he comes up here and says we have a number of 8 parts per billion, you know, that's true, and there are areas. Those numbers are still in question. We're not sure whether or not it was PG&E's or it's natural. So until Dr. Izbicki and the study is going to be able to done, we have no idea where that number's at. But the vast majority is non-detect. So you talked about people came up and requested about changing the background level. It's fair to at least look at the request that people are saying, let's take the average. Not go with the high, let's take the average, because the reality of it is the majority of Hinckley Valley is either at that middle or below. And if 3 years from now, when Dr. Izbicki finishes his study, and you'll see that the majority of Hinckley, we find that it's not natural. By that time, the community is going to be completely annihilated. I mean, at this point, the school's gone, the store's on its way out, the post office is on its way out. People are leaving in droves. Kevin Sullivan mentioned they've got all these crews out there. Well, another crew that's out there is a demolition crew. See them all the time. Houses are gone like that. I mean, it's amazing how quickly you drive down the street. There was a house there last week, and it's gone. So, I mean, we need to look at all perspectives. Things, you know, the board and their staff needs to do their own research. Don't take what PG&E says, or even us, what we say for truth. You know, find the truth, because it's somewhere else. So that's all I have to say on that.
Thank you.
I've received two more cards for this. Lester White wants to speak as himself on this item, and then following Mr. White, Billy Hernandez.
What I was saying about the 1.2 number was that we were just wanting to have an average that would be, the plume would be drawn around that average number until Dr. Zbicki had time to conduct his study. That way we can do it for, obvious reasons, so we can be more aware of where the plume is going. And at bare minimum, we would like to see the 3.1 number, the plumes drawn around that, if we can't get down to the 1.2. We would just like to see plumes drawn around that across the valley, and that's all I had.
Thank you.
Billy Hernandez.
Hello, it's nice to see you again. My official name is Avila Hernandez. Most people know me as Billy. I've been on this for about a year and a half now, on this committee almost. Learned a lot. My concerns have always been for the community. The community is still losing in all this. For the most part, I agree with the remediation process that they're doing. They are knocking down the plume, but they're still not helping the people. They ask questions in the beginning of what can we do for you in the community. Well, we wanted to be separated from the contamination. We wanted clean water for the school and for the people. They offered us bottled water and these filtration systems. Well, that's not going to work. And that's why the majority of the people have decided to leave. You know, 2.5 months ago, the bank told me that the zip code of Hinckley, they weren't loaning any more loans to people in Hinckley, and if you had an equity line, they were canceling it. That's huge, you know. Especially a lot of people that are staying are people that have been there for a long, long time. And to me, that would be the time where they want an equity line, maybe to buy their motorhome and go on vacation, or their daughter's getting married and things like that. And that's not an issue. That's why a lot of people have chosen to leave. The filtration systems, they're not even coming to the community and saying, we're going to do this for life. That's a whole different ballgame. They only want to do it for 5 years or until the maximum chromium level comes out from the state. So if the state comes out and says it's 5 and you have 3.1, you're out of luck. They're going to stop dealing with you. So, you know, there's a lot of issues here that are kind of loopholes all over the place. And every time they don't like it, they'll find a loophole. You know, in the beginning, there was a 3A order that got taken out. And that's because they did their voluntary water program. I believe that 3A order should be put back in, should be reinstated. That means that PG&E is responsible for their chromium. By learning about Mr. Zbicki and him coming in, he has taught us that most of our land out there, the water just rushes right through. It's just mostly sand. There are hills or this or that that might have chromium 6 in them, but the natural is about 1.2. Over to the west, we have one place at 7.1. There's a well, that a monitoring well, that's right next to a 10-acre or a 20-acre piece of land that's not the compressor station, west of Hinckley Road, that was at 8. And then there was a resident that was on the corner of Community Boulevard and Hinckley Road, and his well, about from 2004 to now, went from about 3-point-something up to a 7.1. Bobby Morris's kept going up. Last year when I talked in front of this board, I was non-detect. I have a deep well. And even though I was inside the mile boundary, I was not included in this program. Well, my only thought was to put in my own well at about 130 feet. PG&E said, don't do that. They offered to put monitoring wells on my well. They're going to put three. When they put three on my well, one of my mandates was that one well had to be between 100 and 130 feet. That well is at 4.1 now. So I'm against them capping those 91 wells. You know, those 91 wells is data. Whether it's good or bad, it's data. We as the CAC have talked about it, and we've said, if you have a well that's at the bottom of the aquifer and one at the top, cap it right where it goes through the clay level and still keep that data. You know, we can't go back in time. If we could, this problem would be solved a long time ago if we had data from 50 years ago. But now they want to eliminate more data. I'm against that. I'd like to see those keep going. We've argued about the west. My property, the one on Hinckley Road and Morris's, we're the bubble to the west. Pretty soon they'll own all those properties. And then I imagine that plume will die. And that's upgraded, and I can see their argument towards that. But the levels aren't at the natural level that Mr. Zbicki was talking about 1.2. They're a lot higher. But they even argue on the east side where it's down gradient. Like the gentleman said earlier, a couple months ago, we got the plume moved almost 7.9 miles, I think it was, right, to the north. And that was because of documentation that said that the plume could move 1 foot to 4 foot a day, depending on the velocity of it. And doing the math, you do 50 years times 2 foot, we went halfway, it went 7.9. And that's why Penny Harper to the north and everybody was added into this program. There was 40 more houses added into the program because of the simple math. Now, to the east, there's three different bubbles. They won't connect those lines. If they were to connect the plume line to those three bubbles to the east, which is down gradient, it would probably add about another 12 people at least into this program. And some of them are only like 300 feet outside the plume line, and they have no help from anybody. To me, that's not right. You know, the bank is saying anybody in our zip code. And who do we, you know, we come here and we ask, I've been reading and reading. The other thing that I didn't like about being on this CAC is sometimes when you get on this stuff, you have a meeting tomorrow. All of a sudden, they'll throw a document at you that's 50, 100 pages at you. There's no way you can read it and be prepared for the next day or something to know exactly what's in that thing. So sometimes they're going too fast in certain things. So those are kind of my comments. I'd like your help in any way possible. Thank you.
Thank you. What I'd like to do now is take a 10-minute break and come back here. I'm staring at a clock, but I don't know if it's accurate. Okay. I've been assured that it is, so we could be back at 25 after. And I'm mindful that we have two long agenda items to go. Our seats, please.
You know, it's a good point. So I'm not sure whether privately so much
Okay, what I would like to do at this point is move to item 10, if I remember the order the number's going. Getting late, which is public forum.